Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. As part of a team of journalists from Newsday, Michael D'Antonio won the Pulitzer Prize for his reporting. His latest book that he co-authored, High Crimes, the Corruption, Impunity, and Impeachment of Donald Trump. He joins us this morning to discuss the second impeachment trial of the 45th president, which begins tomorrow. Trump is the only president ever to be impeached twice and will be tried in the Senate on the charge of, quote, inciting violence against the government of the United States. His incitements included months of false claims that the 2020 election was rigged against him and a call for his supporters to, quote, fight like hell, which they heeded by immediately launching a bloody and fatal mob attack on the U.S. Capitol. If found guilty, Trump will almost certainly be punished in a second vote that requires merely a majority of senators present by a lifetime ban on his ever again holding federal office. That, of course, is a big if. Michael D'Antonio, thank you for being here and welcome to the Roundtable this morning. It's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you. It's great to be back with you.
We had you on when the book first came out, when you were writing about the first impeachment trial. I assume you didn't think at the moment there would be a sequel, although I guess it wasn't overly surprising given the given what you were dealing with.
And this is what the impeachment managers actually warned us about. I think in his closing, Adam Schiff talked about how if Trump isn't convicted, he's almost certain to come back again and commit worse crimes. And I think that's what we've seen happen.
Yes. So where are we, do you think, in how, well, let's begin here. How are things different this time than they were the last time, just a year ago, as we were going through the first impeachment trial?
Well, I actually spoke with one of the impeachment managers over the weekend, and this was a person who very much wanted to be involved in the first go-round and felt a little disappointed that he had been left off the group that prosecuted that impeachment. And he noted that it's actually a much easier case to argue. Back then, in impeachment number one, there was a story that needed a lot of effort to lay out. It spanned territory from Ukraine to Washington. It involved dozens and dozens of characters, some with difficult to pronounce and remember and keep straight names. And in the end, I think the American public sort of lost track of it. This time, a great many of us saw everything unfold live on television. And for the background or context, all the managers have to do is go back and present some of the audio and video of Trump setting the table for the attack on the Capitol, beginning back in August when he started saying, the only way I lose is if it's rigged. So it's a much more straightforward case, and you have the sad fact of the senators who are sitting in judgment of the president or the former president also being victims of the attack. They were driven out of their chamber by the mob that he incited.
During the Clinton impeachment, there was that famous moment where on videotape he said, you know, it depends on what your definition of is. So let us go to the definition of incitement. And that's really what they have to prove, right? And that the actions of the President of the United States on that day, January 6th, and on the days leading up to January 6th, following the election, and even really before the election, were inciting people to commit a violent act on that day.
Well, this is as in most questions around impeachment, it's something that can be considered from a legal standard, but it also could be considered from the standard of common sense or political sense. And I think legally, if he were charged in a federal court or a state court with inciting a riot, there are often these standards applied that require a very specific encouragement to wage violence against very specific people. There has to be a sense that it's immediate. So the president would have had to say, go up to the Capitol right now. There couldn't be a vague word like fight, fight, fight. He would have to say, break down the doors if you're barred from entering. That's your house. And you go in and you prevent the senators and members of the House from certifying the election. So that's a very difficult standard for the impeachment managers to meet. But this isn't a criminal trial. It's not even a judicial proceeding in the regular sense of the word. This is the one instance where Congress is actually the purveyor of justice in its own way. And so it's more a preponderance of the evidence and a common sense understanding that I think they'll ask the senators to accept. And I don't think, once you've seen the video of his performance at the rally before the attack on the Capitol, that you could have any doubt that he set the conditions for people to go up and be confrontational, and that he urged them on in a way that any regular person could have predicted trouble was going to follow.
And while I agree with you, the big question is, will 17 GOP senators and the entire contingent of Democratic senators agree with that assessment?
Well, of course, 17 won't. I think we all know that there are a number of senators on the GOP side of the aisle who have already decided that they can't vote to convict Donald Trump. And, you know, there are many reasons for this, but I don't think the leading reason is that they believe he shouldn't be convicted, based on a fair reading of what occurred. I think just as it's a political consideration when one takes up a case against a president and follows through with an impeachment, they are also making a political choice. And in this case, it's more partisan politics than the politics of governing. And I think they're considering their own futures. Where is the Republican Party headed? Is it going to be a Trump party or a Trumpist party going forward? And if that's the case, do I want to be one of just a few Republican senators who voted to convict? I think there are many who don't want to be in that category. And, you know, there's a famous saying that every morning 100 senators get up and see a future president in the mirror. And I think all of them dream of being president one day and are calculating with each vote whether it will help them reach that goal or hinder them.
So let us talk about the non-GOP elephant in the room, which is the matter of, which is a GOP argument, I will say that, and that elephant being the fact that there are many who are saying, look, we don't even know if this is constitutional to be holding this trial.
Well, that is the process argument that I think those who vote against convicting the president, and that his team of lawyers, of course, will be raising. They're going to say, look, the voters have done the work of deciding Donald Trump's fate by turning him out of office, and he's no longer president, so impeaching him as a federal officer doesn't make any sense. Now, the argument against that, which I think is stronger, is that the founders were contemplating impeachment as it occurred in England before America was an independent country. And in that practice, officials were routinely impeached after they left office in order to prevent them from seeking future office. And the provision in the Constitution that allows for federal officers to be barred from future office following impeachment really suggests that we have a similar system in place. And of course, there have been other federal officers who've left thinking they were escaping impeachment and conviction, only to find that the Senate took up the case against them and proceeded to find them guilty. So the preponderance of thought, I think, is on the other side. It's saying that this is a legitimate process. You know, and if you think about it, why would anyone devise a system for policing the behavior of a federal official if all he or she had to do was commit their crime in the last few days of office and then get out of town? You know, that just defies logic. And I think it's the best that you could say about this argument is that it's going to provide cover for senators who really don't want to convict and very much want something to say as they explain their vote of not guilty.
True, but again, quoting Bill Clinton, but will that dog hunt? Meaning when you go out and use that argument, it still seems to me to be somewhat questionable in the sense of that it may be unconstitutional. So what's wrong with going ahead with the facts that are presented to you and then let it go to the courts to decide if it is or is not constitutional?
Well, I'm not sure, actually, that there's an easy avenue for this question to be resolved in the courts. From what I can tell and from the experts I've consulted, you know, everything that happens around impeachment is essentially the province of the Congress. And one thing that we may see after this is all over is an attempt by Congress to recapture some of its lost authority. There's a sense by many in the House especially that Congress has ceded too much to the other branches of government. And this problem of how the Congress functions in a judicial sense does need to be settled. You know, they now have an issue with handing over subpoenas, you know, telling people they must come testify, and then seeing those subpoenas defied and having few workable options for enforcing them. That's a different issue, but it's related because it means the House has lost the ability and the Senate has lost the ability to really act as the founders intended, and that is as a full check on the power of the executive. So there is a lot to be worked out where this is concerned, but I don't think it's reasonable to say that presidents were given all of this power with no countervailing power created by the founders just to keep them in check, to prevent really what we've seen. I mean, this spectacle of the President of the United States ginning up this outrage for months to a point where people were so angry that they were going to seek out the Vice President and try to capture him, and Lord knows what kind of harm they intended to do to him or others in the Capitol. But, you know, this is an appalling and disturbing event that's one of the great tragedies of American history. And I think it really is a wake-up call for us to recognize that some sort of counterweight to the executive is desperately needed.
Michael D'Antonio, the latest book is High Crimes, The Corruption, Impunity, and Impeachment of Donald Trump. I thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. Be well.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.